Ricardo Acuna, the executive director of the Parkland Institute, believes that increased oil prices are not the result of anything the industry has done to add value, but rather a reflection of the increased value of the resource itself. He feels the lion's share of these increased prices should go to the owner of the resource, not the company we're paying to extract it for us. So come here, Ricardo Acuna, expound on the issues surrounding the royalty review. He's the executive director of the Parkland Institute, a policy think tank situated in the Faculty of Arts at the University of Alberta. He has a degree in political science and history from the University of Alberta, and he'll be here Thursday, January 24th at 2008. So come on out, and I think it is a pretty hot topic. I think it's an interesting topic, and I think it'd be well worth coming to see. You can also hear these sessions on the website at www.sacpa.ca. And you can also put in written comments on these topics at that location. So let's restate, or let's go back into the question period. Obviously, Tom and Dave presented some very interesting information to us on gangs and organized crime in Lethbridge. And we will certainly entertain questions. And please, for your questions, would you please approach the mic and make the question from there, and we'll try and keep it an early presentation. And hopefully not more than one or two questions per questioner.
My name is Van Christou. I'd like to thank our speakers for a very excellent presentation in such a short time. It gave us a good picture of what you're all about and how important our support is. I have a great respect for people who are working to prevent crime here, and for people like at our table. We have a counselor who's teaching to students at home value systems that will prevent crime in the future. But I wonder if we're not still steering away from the real nub of what should be done in the matter of prevention. Are we not, as parents in our society, taking too little responsibility in teaching our children these value systems that will prevent the things that you people in the police service and counselors at church, at schools and so on, and churches are having to deal with? Is it not becoming an impossible problem if we don't have people being taught the right way right from the beginning? I'm talking about prevention rather than putting out fires.
Certainly, that's a huge component of it. And when we talk about community capacity, those are some of the big issues we look for. And I think we have to go back and model a little bit after the theory of it takes a community to raise a child. And we have to recognize that not all people have parenting skills, and it's funny how you have to take an exam for just about everything. And one of the most important things in our life, you really are not compelled to be trained in any way, and I don't know that we'll ever get there. But it really is difficult, and as society changes and as values change, we see certainly different things. We are not the values police or the moral police. We enforce the legislation that our governments create. And those governments create those legislations at the demands of their citizens and a recognition of our democratic process. And that's great. And I'd fight tooth and nail for that. But I think we have to remember our role, and we've talked a bit at our table, about the willingness of people to turn their back on community, not to get involved and not to be there on the street. As a young man, certainly I was there involved in hockey, and Randy jokes about it, but Herb actually coached us at one point too. So he was quite proud that I remembered the defensemen play a big role, but I'm wondering about those coaches maybe, but and about providing the organizational capacity. But for sure, you know, they were there. And, if I was outside the arena smoking a cigarette and Herb showed up, he wouldn't walk by me. He'd say, "What are you doing?" Because he knew me, and he knew kids in this community. As a lot of you growing up in this community, or the communities you grew up knew, probably most of the people. Certainly population increase diminishes that a bit, but more about the idea of individual rights being so much more important than those of society. And it's a fine balance, and we'll struggle for a long time to do it, but you're right on. Parents, raise your children, take responsibility for them, and accept the fact that their behaviors are controlled by you a lot. And you have a big role to play. That's not to say that a lot of parents don't do a great job and some kids turn out bad, but then that's when society has to step in, and we have to be willing to work collaboratively to provide for individuals that can't provide for themselves. So whether it be affordable housing, whether it be issues around tolerance in the community, whether it be addictions and whether it be domestic violence and issues of behavior that individuals can't control, we have to provide that. Not only as a community we have to step up and assist, but we have to demand it of our governments. And it's a service, and we have to remember that. We are a police service, and we have to provide service, just the same as our governments. And see Bridget in the back there, and I know she long and hard yells and screams for the rights of seniors and the need for the government to step up and make a change. And I think they do recognize that. We hear it from our SOLGEN. We hear it from our MLAs, and they do, and it's that fine line balance of, again, is sort of how do you increase it? Where does the tax money come from? How do we afford it? And maybe it's that royalty. I don't know.
that's my
okay.
dad who
okay, about Randy, you're running the show. Anyway, Chief, I'd like to just I'm on the board of the Neighborhood Watch here, and I'm also with Crime Stoppers on their board. Neighborhood Watch, we have about 700 or 800 members, I think, in the city right at the present time, so that's about 1% of the population. We should have 10% of the population in Neighborhood Watch. And Neighborhood Watch is a very good program for neighbors to keep an eye on what's happening in their neighborhood. And this would include in counseling some young people. You got to be careful what you say. But I think, you know, in our communities up where we grew up, if Randy got in trouble or Tom got in trouble, we just get a hold of the parent and say, listen, I saw them doing this or that. And the thing was resolved. Anything else with strangers, I guess the police. But I like to put a plug in for Neighborhood Watch. And we do have a website, and we're progressing along, and we have a couple people here right now. One over there is Mark, and this young lady sitting next to me. And we would like to see everybody join. It costs you nothing. The forms are available at the city, at the police station. If you get a hold of Jim Kembitz, and he'll send them out to you. As a matter of fact, Jim even goes out to the community, and he'll get four or five or six neighbors together, and he'll sit down and talk to them about what Neighborhood Watch is all about. So
your plug is here loud and clear, Herb. And in response to your question, this is something we support certainly, and we will drive it forward as hard as we can. We accept some of the responsibility in the failure of that program. It was developed and it was built on the backs of volunteers, and we too quickly handed it off and didn't pay enough attention to it and give it the attention it deserved. We had a communicator, a computer program. It was bought far too many years too soon. We bought it before the advantages of Internet, and now you can very quickly go on the Internet and very cheaply communicate to a lot of people. I think the cost estimation to bring this up to speed was $45,000 for a communicator, something we can't afford within our budget line. But we are exploring other avenues of doing it. And, yes, by all means, and we talked at our table also about Block Watch, and we're going to try and put more plugs in the paper. Thank you very much, Herb, for coming on board and helping us, and to the other volunteers that are in the room. And it makes a huge difference. We've increased our community liaison unit by 2 members, and actually we've combined community and culture to make a community liaison unit. So there's 3 members in there: Blaine Stadoka, Jim Kambites, Leanne Christos, who will leave us shortly to have her second child, but we will fill that term position. And that's their role, to get out and participate. And I encourage you, all of you, to talk to your neighbors about forming Neighborhood Watch and give us a shout. Just phone the police number and they'll connect you. Howard.
Yeah, Howard Forsyth. I've got some very short ones, and you can give me short answers. Has the Lethbridge crime phenomena spread into Carson, Raymond, McGrath, Fort McLeod, Picture Butte? Has it spread, or is it mostly here?
It's not the Lethbridge crime phenomena. They've spread into us. No, yes, it's...
Don't tell them in McGrath. Second question, quick. What percentage male-female, 90-10?
Of
you
criminals?
You didn't say much about criminal activity. Some. Mm-hmm. But how much? One-tenth?
It would appear guess and speculation. It's still predominantly male, but women are making their presence known. And they're demanding their rights of equalization.
What's the figure?
I have no idea of that figure, Howard. I'm sorry.
30-70?
I'd have to check in, and I'll see if we got some... David, and your stuff with intelligence, have you seen something there?
Just in relation to female crime, one of the phenomena that we see are women involved in street gangs, organized street gangs. women involved in organized street gangs. What they're used mainly for is for the transporting of drugs, because it's unlikely that a male police officer is going to search a female. If I was going to give you a percentage of what we see in Lethbridge, I would say for about every 10 gang members out of one project we ran, there might be one female associated. So I 1 in 10 from what we've seen in a project where we arrested 35 individuals and laid 125 charges. They're still used for prostitution, escorts, strip clubs, for what we call muling the drugs for the males, because the males are more likely to get stopped and searched. But they are increasing in number.
The male's a predator. One more quick one. Bullies, I've been conscious of bullies in the last 10 or 15 years of a long life. I think bullies are some of the most dangerous people, not only in a local community, but worldwide. The U.S. is a bully. Are they mostly bullies and delayed adolescents? Years ago, we grew up at 20. Now, a lot of adolescent boys are 30 and 35. Is that true? Is that it? Is it a bully phenomenon? Starts early?
I would have to say yes and no. There are some individuals that we deal with that definitely you can see that that's what their background was and the way that they were raised. But we also have individuals that are involved in crime. And the bottom line is this. I can go and get a job at McDonald's and make $8 an hour, or I can turn around and sell drugs for the guy that's got the brand new Escalade down the street and make $1,000 a week. When it comes down to it, and the pressures that these kids have on society and the amount of information that that comes to them daily, it's far easier to turn around and make the $1,000 a week to sell a little bit of crack cocaine than it is to actually go 8 hours a day to McDonald's to work your summer job. It's convenience. It's speed. A lot of these kids, they live in an environment and have grown up in an environment where information is instantaneous. Unlike you and me, where my first computer was actually had the old big printout cartridges and paper, and you could only do one thing at a time on it. Nowadays, these kids don't live without technology. So the information is fast and furious, and they expect their external life to be fast and furious.
By kids, you mean males, right?
No, it's male and female. I think that my daughter can send more text messages in 5 minutes than I can talk on the phone. In a criminal environment, they absolutely take advantage of it. If I'm going to work for the city of Lethbridge as a programmer, and I'm going to be paid $53,000 or $63,000 a year, as compared to being able to steal $1 million in a weekend utilizing my computer skills, some people, unfortunately, pick the $1 million in a weekend, and all of us are victimized by it. There's no discrimination between the sexes. They become, as Chief McKenzie said, they're equal as criminals as well.
Hi, my name is Ann Miller from Lethbridge, and I was curious. The lady sitting beside me, her husband is a retired teacher, and he commented that the Young Offenders Act has some relationship to the kind of gang activity and the age, average age of the members, older, mature members using young members, because I don't know if you've seen that in Lethbridge. I was just curious, so I thought I'd ask.
In relation to your question on that, what we have seen in dealing with one specific group out of that originated out of the Edmonton area is that they would come down to Lethbridge and they would go into the high schools and they would turn around and solicit the kids that were 14, 15 years old to sell whatever drugs they wanted to sell at a street level, and they would teach them how to do it, and then they would disappear, and they would come back once a month or twice a month to collect the money and also bring more drug product down. So they remove themselves from it. But also they're picking on the younger kids because they know at the end of the day through the justice system it's not likely that they're going to do jail time or any lengthy jail time. So, yes, there is some advantages that are taking the younger kids. Also, with the younger kids in our community, it's easier for those individuals that have been in that business for a long time and are older to threaten them with violence, to bully them into selling drugs for them or following the line and not reporting to the police that they're involved in that activity. At the end of the day, they do take advantage of our youth. Yes, in that instance. If you look at the area of escort companies, what I could comment on that is that the escort companies are largely female dominated and are run by females. The ones that I deal with and have had contact with here and in Red Deer, it's an all-female environment. So it depends on what the crime is as well.
Hi, my name is Knut Peterson. I'd like to know if we are winning the battle. For every cure, there's a new disease. Are we getting ahead?
It's one of those questions, I guess, you can take in many directions. And yes, the short answer is yes, we're winning the battle. Because I think what we have to remember is still the largest proportion of our society are people you can trust. They're people that you can live with daily and you can get along with. And ultimately, yes, our society has not really decayed that badly yet. Sometimes I think we're on a slippery road, and you hear a lot of comments about the road to hell is paved with good intentions and it's a six-lane freeway. But, I think still predominantly, the vast majority of the kids in the school are good kids. The vast majority of my neighbors on my block are great people, and I would send my child to their home to have them take care of them at any time. And I would trust them with my equipment, my tools, and those things, and it's good. It's a small percentage still that do it. Crime stats have been decreasing in a lot of ways, but I can take those stats and I can manipulate them in a lot of ways. Homicide rates are down, but serious injury rates are higher. So does that say that we're having less violent crime, or the emergency centers are doing a lot better job in saving people? Those sorts of aspects. But certainly I think we are making a difference. And not to sort of do away with policing, but I can tell you what, we could disappear tomorrow and crime would go up. In a few years, it's going to come back down, and it's going to look like this. And you can look back through history, and it's done that. And, Howard, there's many theories. I know young girls that are car thieves now. I know girls that are involved in the drug trade and prostitution. But most of those girls, I think, as you'd commented, they are the victims. The prostitutes are not the criminals. They are a victim, and they are a very big victim of domestic violence, of drug abuse, of sexual abuse, and those things. I have not ever ran into a lady that has worked, and even when I used to license escorts, and don't mistake it, escorts are prostitutes. They're just licensed, and they behave in a different way, and they choose to emphasize or exercise their right to what consenting adults do in private is their business. And they are, in some form or another, have been abused in their life. And I talked with a lady yesterday who was 60 years old, the first street prostitute I'd met in Lethbridge, and she had a huge heroin addiction, which I discovered when I went to drug work in the early 80s. I didn't think it existed in Lethbridge. And we had a long chat yesterday because of concerns and problems she has. But she's been straight for 18 years, and all of it became from her early childhood sexual abuse at the age of 9 and whatnot. So, yes. Yeah. And bullying is a huge component of it, you bet. But I guess in one form or another, they're a bully, whether they're bullying you financially or they're bullying you for their own personal reasons. But a lot of victims of bullying will turn into offenders as well. So, yeah.
Gary Stauffer here. I'm a male. You gave quite a menu of activities that gangs were involved in. I'd like to know what your estimate is as the number of gangs that are operating in this area. And do we have any problems with ethnic gangs as they do in the larger centers? And finally, what is the greatest area of concern? What are they specialized in around here? Is it drugs? What is it? If you could answer that for me.
I'll defer very quickly to David for numbers, but our opinion and our concern is very much drugs followed by technology very closely.
Just in relation to the number of groups that we have, throughout the province of Alberta, we're somewhere in the neighborhood of about 20 different groups that are operating. In Lethbridge, the groups that we've been able to identify here would be about 4. One of the street gang groups originating from Edmonton, and then every once in a while we have other members show up from the Calgary area, which are vastly different. We also now are starting to see members from a specific gang coming out from the Ontario area. But very small in numbers. We're aware of them, and we're working with those agencies involving those individuals. And as far as Chief McKenzie said, the number one activity is the trafficking of crack cocaine. Probably one of the biggest drug problems that we have in our city. I can probably purchase crack cocaine quicker than I can purchase marijuana in the city of Lethbridge. One of the key drugs responsible for our robberies, highly addictive drug, We were quite successful a couple of years ago. We had some individuals come down from Calgary to distribute and sell methamphetamine. Our drug unit did a fantastic job, caught them right away at a high weight, and we were able to provide expert testimony in court and see them get 4 years for drug traffic on each of those individuals. The word spread very quickly on the street. Don't sell methamphetamine in Lethbridge because you're going to go to jail for 4 years, and we rarely, if ever, see it down here. So there was a good initiative there. But the gang members we've identified, we work with our other fellow agencies in, throughout Alberta and outside Alberta, and we're very quickly to identify them because they really don't belong. On the question of ethnicity, yes, there are some groups that definitely follow ethnic and cultural lines. But what we're starting to see is that it's more of a United Nations approach. Their crimes are opportunistic in nature, a lot of them, especially the technology and economic and financial crimes. And what they'll turn around and do is whoever I can work with at that time to make money, that's who I'll work with. I may never work with them again, but for that short 2 or 3 week period, we're going to make our money and then we're going to disappear and go join up with somebody else. There's a lot of cooperation amongst the organized crime groups because they found that instead of fighting each other, they could actually make money together. And it's made it more difficult for law enforcement to specifically identify. We used to say things like Asian organized crime and traditional mafia organized crime and that. We can't say those things today because they're actually working together.
It's 1:30, so we'll entertain one more final question, please.
My name is Bob Anderson. Probably a very naive question. You talked about gangs, some coming down from Calgary and going back and so on. How do you identify somebody who's a gang member? How do you get to know them? How do you identify them?
We actually, through law enforcement and leaning on our partners in the United States and their experience with gangs, we've actually defined a criteria on what makes a gang member. We have things like they've told us that they're a gang member. They have tattoos or wear colors that are associated with a specific gang. There's been testimony and evidence shown in court that they've been involved and convicted of crimes that are involving gang activity, or we get source information that they're involved. In a simple example, we would turn around and get information about a young man turning around and selling drugs at one of the local restaurants in town or at a local parking lot. And we would start to investigate that person. We start to find out who his friends are and who he's hanging around with. Next thing you know, we see him with a person, and we talk to the Edmonton Police Service, and we find out, well, actually he belongs to this specific gang. So now he's associating with a gang member. We arrest him. We deal with him. We let him go. We arrest him again, and now he has a tattoo, and we know that that tattoo is specific to that gang. So that's kind of a short version of how we end up identifying these individuals.
I'd certainly like to thank Chief McKenzie and Sergeant Mace for coming out and sharing some important information, and I'd also like to thank everybody that's here attending to support our Lethbridge Regional Police Service. And again, thank you all for coming, and thank you for being here.